Now, by using a radioactive isotope of carbon, tagged carbon atoms, which can be traced by the radiations they emit, are introduced into plants through the soil or otherwise, and followed through each stage of photosynthesis. At Antioch College, at the University of California, at the University of Pennsylvania, at the California Institute of Technology, and a number of other laboratories, groups of researchers are hot on this trail. Agriculture is bound to be profoundly affected and tremendously benefited by the findings, which are current and imminent. As a direct result, the standards of human life all over the world will be raised continually.
This is not guesswork. This is happening. These are the facts of life. You heard a few moments ago the facts of death. These facts, all scientists of any or no political creed are agreed upon. They are agreed upon something else. Life and death are mutually exclusive. You can't have both at once. Back in 1947, the Federation of American Scientists made this statement.
We scientists keep reiterating, atomic warfare is intolerably severe. There is no adequate defense against atomic bombs. There will be no defense. We assert that national security cannot result from military preparedness. Inescapably, then, national security lies in world security, and that can be attained only by international action.
With all this agreement, how did we ever get into the political snarl we seem to be in? Let's look at it. Let's see how we got where we are politically. Because it was only 4 months after the bomb had been dropped at Hiroshima that the United Nations sat down to vote on the setting up of an International Atomic Energy Commission.
The commission's instructions, gentlemen, will be: one, extending between the nations the exchange of basic scientific information for peaceful ends. Two, control of atomic energy to the extent necessary to ensure its use only for peaceful purposes. Three, the elimination from national armaments of atomic weapons and of other major weapons adaptable to mass destruction. Four, effective safeguards by way of inspection and other means to protect complying states against the hazards of violations and evasions.
And the vote for this commission? Unanimous. 6 months later, in June 1946, the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission held its first meeting and heard the United States representative, Mr. Bernard M. Baruch, put forward his country's proposals.
My fellow members of the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission, and my fellow citizens of the world, we are here to make a choice between the quick and the dead.
Areas of agreement were found there, too. If we had the committee here with us now, we might ask them, gentlemen, do you agree that the ultimate aim of atomic energy control must be the end of atomic weapons as a means of waging war?
Agreed.
Do you believe that to outlaw the bomb is not enough, that effective international control and inspection must be set up from mining to power plants?
Agreed.
And do you agree that an international agency is required for this, established under the United Nations?
Agreed.
Not a bad beginning. Those areas of agreement, by the way, were quoted from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. But differences arose over interpretation and over the timing of the various steps to be taken. The United States plan, now supported by a majority of the commission, called for gradual introduction of control of atomic energy, followed eventually by the abolition of atomic weapons. The Soviet plan wanted the weapons destroyed and abolished at the same time as controls were set up. Said Andrei Gromyko of the Soviet Union,
"The consideration of all the questions related to the establishments of atomic energy control will inevitably require some time, and in view of this, the postponement of the conclusion of a convention on the prohibition of atomic weapons cannot be justified."
The second point of difference was over the degree of inspection necessary. USA Representative John Hickerson said,
"Inspection by the international personnel of the International Control Agency is of crucial importance. Unless the treaty contains broad provisions to this effect, the world can have no confidence that the treaty is being obeyed. We do not want periodic inspection of declared facilities. We want continuous inspection, not inspection on Monday and maybe Thursday. We want inspection Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and holidays."
But in supporting the Soviet Union's plan for periodic inspection of facilities declared by governments, Mr. Vyshinsky said,
"I wish to make it quite clear that there are no reasons whatsoever to allege that we wish to evade control or that we do not wish control. What is the meaning of periodic inspections? Periodic inspections mean inspection on Monday, then next Monday, then Thursday, let us say, then the following Thursday, then 2 weeks after that, or any time. This would be what is explained by the expression from time to time, or periodic. And periodic inspection under the Soviet plan is complemented by special investigations in cases where suspicions of violation arise."
But the United States wanted to go even further. It wanted all atomic plants in the world to be owned and managed by the same International Control Commission. When asked why the United States thought this necessary, Mr. Hickerson replied,
"Because of the very special nature of atomic energy. Atomic energy comes from plutonium and uranium-235. These are heavy metals. A small piece of them, no bigger than a matchbox, contains more energy than thousands of tons of coal. If we prohibited these metals, we would never be able to use them to make electric power. We have to control their use, or they might be used secretly to make weapons. Without effective controls, they could be transferred very quickly into use for weapons. That is why the United Nations plan on atomic energy control is based on the premise that nations are not to be allowed to own and control atomic source materials, nuclear fuels, and facilities for making or using dangerous quantities of these materials."
Here's Mr. Gromyko's reply to this.
"I have already pointed out that the proposal would lead to interference by the control organ in the internal affairs and internal life of states. I deem it necessary to emphasize that granting broad rights and powers of such a kind to the control organ is incompatible with the state sovereignty. The Soviet Union is aware that there will be a majority in the control organs which may take one-sided decisions, a majority on whose benevolent attitude toward the Soviet Union the Soviet people cannot count. Therefore, the Soviet Union, and probably not only the Soviet Union, cannot allow that the fate of its national economy be handed over to this organ."
The question of national sovereignty came in for a lot of discussion, and the Canadian representative, Mr. Lester Pearson, put it his own way.
"It will be small comfort if and when some atomic bomb drops on us to know that while we have lost everything else, we have saved our sovereignty to the very end.
These issues have never been settled. In May of 1948, after 2 years of negotiation and 2 reports to the Security Council, the 3rd report began this way.
The Atomic Energy Commission reports that it has reached an impasse.
This impasse was still in effect when a recordable rumble was heard across the world. And on the 24th of September, 1949, while the 59 nations of the General Assembly of the United Nations were meeting in solemn conclave on this very subject, the President of the United States had his secretary announce to a press conference the end of an era.
We have evidence that within recent weeks, an atomic explosion occurred in Soviet Russia.
It takes 2 sides to make a war. A shudder followed the rumble around the world. Said a former optimist.
There'll be war in 6 months.
Said a former pacifist.
We should act now and get it over with.
Said a former soldier.
Mary, go upstairs and get my uniform out of the trunk.
Said a former president.
This is not one world, but 2 worlds. The United Nations has been defeated as a preservative of peace.
The council chambers of the world recorded the rumble, too. At Lake Success, the president of the United Nations General Assembly, General Carlos Romulo of the Philippines, told his fellow statesmen,
"The choice is rapidly becoming either peaceful negotiation through the United Nations or the unimaginably horrible negotiation of mass murder on the battlegrounds of an atomic war."
Then a fresh approach was made by the Soviet delegation. In a new resolution.
The Security Council recognizes that it is essential that information should be submitted by states on conventional armaments and on atomic weapons.
But the next day, the United States delegate replied,
"Such a count without verification would be meaningless."
And the President of the United States referred once again to the U.S. plan.
"We support this plan and will continue to support it unless or until a better and more effective plan is put forward."
Replied the Soviet foreign minister,
"One would have to be devoid of the least shreds of reason to even dream that this plan could ever be acceptable to the Soviet Union."
This, then, is how we got here. This is how we stepped over the threshold into the atomic age. I wonder how much of it has sunk into our consciousness. Or have we just tucked it away into a corner like an old daydream and gone on with life as usual? Let's put it this way. If I wanted to see what marvels the atomic age had brought us, and I looked up the new listings in the Manhattan telephone directory, what would I find? I always start at the bottom of a column. Let's start at the bottom.
Atomic Undergarment Company.
If you're caught that way, just call the
Atomic Dress Company, Longacre 36042.
Or if it's a nice day, try the
Atomic Sportswear Company, Gramercy 724 and Iron 7.
Perhaps it's not a nice day.
Atomic Rainwear Incorporated.
Or if it's cold,
Atomic Knitwear.
Then if you're going out to dine at the
Atom Restaurant,
you'll be happy to know you can complete your wardrobe at the
Atomic Hat Company,
Atomic Neckwear Manufacturing Company,
Atomic Jewelry Company,
Atomic Handbag Company.
After dinner, if you like, light your cigarette courtesy
Atomic Lighter Company.
You can sit at your favorite chair and read the
Atomic Energy News.
If you don't like it, there's always the
Atomic Waste Paper Company.
Or you might like to write a letter, stationary courtesy the
Atomic Envelope and Printing Company.
With an
Atomic Ballpoint Pen.
Of course, if you don't like writing, the
Atomic Letter Service
will handle the whole thing for you. And you can just relax and enjoy yourself courtesy the
Atomic Radio and Television Company.
And listen on your radio to something like this.
Brought to you by the Atomic Exterminating Company Limited. And now the quartet sings Atom and Evil.
Boom, 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 boom. Yes,
the story of Adam and evil. The curse of his causing a great of evil. For evil got him drunk on prejudice and hate, and she taught him how to gamble with humanity's fate. Now the Adam is a youngster and pretty hard to handle, but we better step in and stop the scandal. Because if Adam and evil should ever be wed, darn near all of us are gonna be dead.
So true. I'm talking about Adam and evil. Adam and evil. If you don't break up that romance soon, we'll all fall down and go boom, 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 boom.
We're sitting on the edge of
doom,
doom,
doom, doom.
So much for the phone book. New names for old faces in that telephone directory. If you've ever been exposed to a bikini bathing suit, you'll know it doesn't uncover anything new. But in spite of fashions, even in spite of political deadlock, atomic energy is changing more than the surface of the world. For instance, let's look in another directory. This one put out by the United Nations. Better still, let's have an introduction from its editor, the Secretary of the UN's Atomic Energy Commission, Dr. Otto Frey.
One of the important tasks with which the General Assembly has charged the Atomic Energy Commission is to extend between all nations the exchange of basic scientific information for peaceful ends. But most of the scientific literature on atomic energy is contained not in books, but in articles, which are scattered through hundreds of periodicals in various languages. To make these articles accessible to scientists everywhere, the UN Secretariat has collected all the titles together and prepared the first existing international bibliographies on atomic energy. The reception these bibliographies were given showed the enormous interest which exists in all countries for a better understanding of the great and varied applications of atomic energy. When so many are hungry, sick, and poor, the possible benefits of atomic energy in farming, medicine, industry, and so on must be made known to all. We shall then have collected together almost everything the world has published on the subject.
And the world knows a great deal, judging by some of the entries in this directory.
The United Nations Bibliography on Atomic Energy.
Leonardus O'Hagan. Tantalum, niobium, urânio e rádio no Brasil.
Tantalum, niobium, uranium and radium in Brazil.
Les possibilités d'utilisation industrielle de l'énergie atomique.
Possibilities for industrial use of atomic energy, Paris, France.
Barber, Mitchell and Spinks. Soil studies using radioactive phosphorus.
Ottawa, Canada.
Балткевич Геве о роли атомной энергии в жизни Земли.
The role of atomic energy in calculating the age of the Earth, Leningrad, USSR.
辐射的生物影响与用途.
Biological effects of radium and their uses, Nanking, China.
Bartleston, H.J. and others. Use of radioactive iodine as a tracer in the study of physiology of teeth.
Baltimore, USA.
Goldsmith, V.M. Geochemiske bestanddeler av elementene.
Geochemical composition particles of the elements, Oslo, Norway. And in London, England...
Akers, Sir William, metallurgical problems involved in the generation of useful power from atomic energy.
Now, why have we not heard so much of the things in this directory? Well, when a bomb travels, it's news. But when a book travels, it doesn't get met at the airport by reporters with microphones. When a blueprint sails from Copenhagen to Cape Town, there are no photographers on hand. And when a radioactive isotope takes a trip from California to Cairo, there are no banner headlines. But the story is there, and it's not all black. At Oak Ridge, Tennessee, we asked the top man, Dr. Abersold, how many countries are now receiving shipments from your lab at Oak Ridge?
We ship radioactive isotopes to about 150 institutions in 21 foreign countries.
Dr. Abersold, to your knowledge, are any other countries distributing radioactive isotopes?
Well, the British now have a reactor at Harwell, and they are distributing radioactive isotopes to countries in Europe. And the Canadians now also have a reactor and will soon be distributing radioisotopes to other countries. I don't know about the Soviet Union.
What about the Soviet Union? Here is Mr. Vyshinsky in the official interpretation.
Right now, we're utilizing atomic energy for our economic needs in our own economic interests.
This is with us, too, as well as the bomb and the deadlock. So we have seen where we are and how we got here. Where do we go from here? Few of us have the gift of prophecy, but all of us must make up our minds which way we want to go. Those who know most about the ways we can go are not all in agreement. We had better hear them, says David Lilienthal, writing in Collier's magazine.
To make the industrial atom really sprout and flourish within the next decade or so would create kinds of jobs and businesses and ways of living now undreamed of. Here would be something concrete and understandable for the whole world to take note of.
Says Dr. J. Robert Oppenheimer in an article.
Clearly, arrangements that could be established between governments for the purpose of profitably exploiting atomic energy have an important bearing on the probabilities for the maintenance of peace. But such arrangements, significant though they may be for our future welfare, cannot pretend to offer us real security. They are part of the necessary conditions for the long-range maintenance of peace. But no one would for a moment suppose them to be sufficient. Thus, if we try to examine what part atomic energy may play in international relations in the near future, we can hardly believe that it alone can reverse the trend to rivalry and conflict which exists in the present-day world.
And now,
this is Jeff Sparks of UN Radio. A little while ago, I was privileged to have an interview with Dr. Einstein in his study at Princeton University. And in a moment, you will hear his own voice. First, here are some of the views he expressed during our long conversation. I asked Dr. Einstein if he thought it was an exaggeration to say that at this moment the fate of the world was hanging in the balance. He replied it was no exaggeration. He said that striving for peace and preparing for war are incompatible with each other, and in our time more so than ever. When I asked if he thought we could avoid a war, he said, "If we have the courage to decide ourselves for peace, we will have peace." He told me, if you are not firmly decided to resolve things in a peaceful way, you will never come to a peaceful solution. I then asked Dr. Einstein just how he thought we should go about preventing another war. He said that the remedy didn't lie in preparing for the event of war, but in starting from the conviction that security for military disaster can only be realized by patient negotiation and through creation of a legal basis for the solution of international problems, supported by a sufficiently strong executive agency. In short, some sort of a world government. As an immediate first step, he recommended that the present stock of atomic bombs be placed in the hands of an international authority, but he warned that one-sided disarmament is not possible. He told me, "The most important thing is the will to peace and the readiness to accept every step needed for this goal." Then I asked Dr. Einstein one more question, and he recorded for me his answer, in which he referred to another giant of modern times, Mahatma Gandhi. Here is my question.
Dr. Einstein, since this is a moment of great danger to us all, what word would you broadcast to all the peoples of the world?
Taken on the whole, I would believe that Gandhi's views were the most enlightened of all the political men in our time. We should strive to do things in his spirit, not to use violence in fighting for our cause, but by non-participation in anything you believe is evil.
Thank you, Professor Einstein.
Says President Harry S. Truman.
Now, you hear a lot of talk these days to the effect that the world is full of dangers and that our civilization is heading straight for disaster. Of course the world's full of dangers. The world always has been full of dangers for people in every country and at every period of history. As men have gained more scientific knowledge, the dangers which could come from the misuse of that knowledge have grown greater. But by the same token, the opportunities for human advancement have also become greater. Our scientific achievements can be used for good and need not be used for evil. Our civilization need not wind up in disaster. It can go on to greater heights.
Need not, which is it to be? The prophets don't all agree, you see, about which road we should follow. They agreed about one thing, though. We must decide now, the dream or the nightmare, to be or not to be. This is the year of decision.
United Nations Radio has brought you John Garfield in Year of Decision, compiled and directed by Mabel Moore, with a musical score composed and conducted by Louis Applebaum. The program was produced by Gerald Keane of United Nations Radio. The Golden Gate Quartet sang the song Adam and Evil, which was written by Hi Zarrett and Lou Singer. Field recordings were made by UN reporters Jeff Sparks and Michael Haywood. United Nations Radio wishes to acknowledge the cooperation of Dr. Otto Frey, Secretary of the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission, for assistance in the preparation of this transcribed broadcast.